AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Search teams are back out today looking for the final victim of Friday's hot air balloon crash in Virginia. AP's Ed Donahue reports that the University of Richmond readies for graduation ceremonies today with the knowledge two members of the athletic staff are among the dead.
The University of Richmond says assistant women's basketball coach Ginny Doyle and director of basketball operations Natalie Lewis were passengers on the balloon. It caught fire after hitting a power line. Two bodies have been found. Corinne Geller is with Virginia State Police.
They will continue to keep searching until any wreckage can be found. We've still not located the basket or the balloon. We do continue to keep finding debris.
There was a moment of silence at the University of Richmond's law school commencement. I'm Ed Donahue.
Residents of two regions in eastern Ukraine casting ballots in hastily organized independence referendums, which have been rejected as illegal by the Ukrainian government and the West. Peter Leonard reports those against independence appear to be staying away from the polls.
Organizers would maintain that it's a genuine expression of the will of the people. So polling has shown that most people are kind of leery of any suggestion that this region should break away from Ukraine.
Ukraine's interim president says the pro-Russian supporters of independence for the East don't understand that it would wreck the country. Arkansas state lawyers readying their appeal of a state judge's decision overturning the 2004 constitutional amendment passed by voters banning gay marriage. 15 marriage licenses issued yesterday for same-sex couples in one county. Jerry Cox with Arkansas Family Council tells KTHV-TV a single judge can't override the overwhelming opinion of the voters.
I'll call it judicial tyranny because it's simply not right for one judge in Little Rock to overrule a fair vote of all the people of Arkansas.
This is AP Radio News. Police officers from around the country are being honored during National Police Week in Washington. Steve Greniger is a spokesman for the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. He says the names of nearly 300 officers will be added to the memorial this year.
We are going to be formally dedicating the names of 286 law enforcement officers onto the memorial this coming Tuesday at our annual candlelight vigil.
A number of conferences, competitions, and services will be held as well throughout the week. A newly brokered ceasefire deal lasted less than 2 days in South Sudan before renewed fighting broke out again. Each side blames the other. Government troops and the rebels are battling for control of a strategic oil town. Both the government and rebel forces have been blamed for horrific crimes against humanity in that fight over that town. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
If you're a fan of great military movies like Saving Private Ryan and Lone Survivor, then you will love the GI Film Festival coming to the D.C. area May 19th through the 25th. GIF is Sundance for the Troops, where Hollywood and the military come together to screen incredible new movies, host parties and awards, and more. Plus, GIF is the only place where you can walk the red carpet with real military heroes and Hollywood stars like Gary Sinise, Ricky Schroeder, and Adam Driver. So don't wait. Get your tickets today at GIFilmFestival.com. That's GIFilmFestival.com.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
It's been called magical, powerful, revealing, and truly special. I'm referring to the GI Film Festival, also known as Sundance for the Troops, and it's coming to the D.C. area May 19th through the 25th. This event features red carpet movie premieres, world-class parties, award shows, and so much more. So join Hollywood stars Gary Sinise, Adam Driver, and Ricky Schroeder as we celebrate the heroes of the U.S. military on screen and on stage. Visit GIFilmFestival.com today and buy your tickets. GIFilmFestival.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Colin Callahan. And today's show is brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping you control the cost of health care. We have a great lineup of guests on our show for you today, including Vlad Friedman, who's the CEO of a company called Edge Web Hosting, Brian Martin, the president of History Associates, Todd Stottlemyre, the CEO of Essentia, and Melvin Petty, the managing partner and CEO of ERP International. First up is a young man by the name of Vlad Friedman, who's the CEO of Edge Web Hosting. What is Edge Web Hosting, Vlad?
So thanks for having me here. Edge Web Hosting provides mission-critical web hosting services to companies whose public-facing web presence is really important to their business. Our focus is around healthcare, education, compliance, finance, e-commerce. And folks typically come to us after they've had some type of issue when they've tried to run the platform in-house or with another vendor, and we come to the table and create the right outcomes for our customers that they're looking for.
Give us an example of an outcome a customer would be looking for doing business with you.
So typically an outcome would be a high security platform or a high traffic website, someone who hasn't been able to engineer a design that worked effectively.
Right. When did you found the company?
So I founded the web hosting company in 1998 as a spinoff of my second IT, of my first company.
And how big or small are you today in terms of size?
So today we're about 50 people. We're planning to do about $15 million in revenue this year, and we host roughly around 20,000 websites.
Wow. And this isn't your first time at the rodeo as far as being an entrepreneur, is it?
No. This was actually a spinoff from my first company that I started at the age of 18.
Tell us about that endeavor.
So when I was 18 and needed to pay my own way through college, I decided what better way than starting an IT business. So I went ahead, got my first customer's referral, showed up at their front door. They asked me if I could develop their software. I had no idea about the platform that anything was written in. Went to the library that night, got a couple hundred page book, read it that night, came back the next day and started working. And that's how I got my first customer in my IT business.
And it was that easy for you to do the coding piece?
I don't want to say it was easy, but I was never afraid of failure.
Uh-huh.
So I never had any issues saying, I'm going to dive in head first. And if I land on my head, I'm okay with that. And I had confidence knowing that I'd be able to pull it off.
So tell us about that company that you founded when you were 18 and the early days, and how far did you take it?
So originally I started in the basement of my home. I hired my father on after about a year as my CFO. We ran it there and grew it to a pretty good size. We went into the automotive logistics business, where we were writing software that handled all of the logistics processes from the time that a car left the manufacturing plant to the time that it arrived to a dealer.
How did you get the idea for that?
You know, I had a, based on my whole premise of not believing I could fail, I had a company come to me and tell me, we've got a ship coming in with about 5,000 cars in 4 months, and we don't have any software to manage any of this. Can you pull it off? And I said, of course I can. At that point, I went and I worked 1,600 hours in 4 months, and the day that the ship arrived, the software was ready to go, and we launched. And after I got my first port, that started to spread to ports all around the country.
So it couldn't have all gone this easy. So tell us about an experience that didn't go so well and what you learned from it.
It was never easy. But there were plenty of lessons, along the way. Some of the challenging lessons are just, when you're small and you're growing, you always believe everything's going to go right. And the first time that things go wrong and you lose a large account or you don't want a deal that you were counting on, or you lose a critical employee, I mean, that's the hardest thing you can imagine at a small size. And back when I was just starting the hosting business, one of our customers got purchased by eBay Motors. And at a time, we were running about 20% of all the hosting for eBay Motors. And then all of a sudden, eBay decided to take it all in-house. Mm-hmm. And we lost 30% of the revenue for the company overnight. And that was one of my very important lessons to learn in business, that you never put all your eggs in one basket. And you always plan around the fact that your largest customer won't always be there and running your business using the financial model, assuming they won't be there.
So it sounds like you've got the technology aspects of it down, how to code, how to do the infrastructure of an IT kind of a support service. Where'd you learn how to run a business?
You know, that really came over the course of maybe the last 5 or 6 years. I've been in it for 22 now. And there kind of came an inflection point where I realized I've either going to take the business to the next level or there's no way I'm going to scale any larger, because I was creating linear scale and that wasn't working, where the number of people I hired was directly proportional to my revenue. And I decided I really needed to take a big risk. And that was when I brought in my first executive, who was a real heavy hitter, and leveraged his experience and his knowledge and his background running $500 million, $600 million companies as the first person on my staff to help take us to the next
level.
Was
that risky for you to give up control?
It was very risky. It wasn't just control. It was the cost of doing that.
Uh-huh.
But I realized very quickly how good of a decision it was, and I continued to repeat that and surround myself with people that were really bright and really talented in their respective areas, where I didn't have to feel like I was the guy doing it. Yeah. I knew I could count on other people.
So where are you from?
So originally I'm from Kyiv in Ukraine.
Uh-huh. How did you come to be in the United States?
So in 1979, when I was 6 years old, our family decided to move here to really get away from some of the persecution that was going on in the Ukraine at the time.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about that so we get a sense of it.
You know, my parents told me a story where, my father, who's a smart guy, he was running a division, and there was a supervisory role available. And they came to him and they said, you know, you're smart enough to be the supervisor, you're talented, you work hard, but, you're Jewish and we just can't have a Jewish supervisor here. And they really had the epiphany of they didn't want to live in a country and they didn't want me to grow up in a place where people thought that way.
So your father and mom decided to come here?
They decided to come here.
You were 6 years old?
I was 6 years old.
What did your dad do? When he got here?
So he got his first job at a computer company, and what was interesting was, he went in there, he fixed a problem no one else could fix, but he couldn't speak a word of English. And the one question he couldn't answer is, how much salary do you want? So they just had to guess, but they hired him on the spot. And then after a little while, he was actually running the whole division.
So looking back on it as a six-year-old or a seven-year-old new in this country, what do you remember most about that experience of coming brand new into this place?
You know, it's interesting. I remember everybody being positive. You know, it wasn't, oh my goodness, we're so scared and this is all new and we don't know the language and we're showing up in a brand new country with $90 in our pocket. It was just about, this is a new opportunity.
What were dinner conversations like back then?
Do we have dinner? Is there anything for dinner? Not what's for dinner. But we came here and they started positive, and my parents always were very hard workers. My mother worked for $2 an hour on night shift, and my father started for very little, but they really moved through the ranks very quickly and mm-hmm. got to a very comfortable point because they weren't afraid to roll up their sleeves and work hard. Right. And that set a great example for me as a kid.
You said something earlier in the interview about fear and not having fear.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
You know, there's a number of life incidences that mm-hmm. I went through when, first coming here as a kid, that was very intimidating, and the perspective on people from Russia was very different at the time.
Yeah.
So I had to learn to get a thick skin very quickly.
Uh-huh.
And be just really tenacious and not be afraid of adversity. And then as I grew up, that just started to permeate my personality. And then as I got older, I had a very close friend of mine who passed away in a car accident. Mm-hmm. And that was something that was very difficult for me to deal with. But as I came out of that experience, that made me 10 times stronger. And right. then throughout my life, there's just been incident after incident where each time I just learn how to be stronger from it. Uh-huh. Instead of sometimes folks will take it and learn how to be weaker
right.
from a difficult experience.
And you said earlier that your father's in the business with you. What role does he play?
So he has been the CFO since the beginning. He plays a little bit less of an active role today, but he was always around the finance part of the business. He's actually a technologist, and both my parents have engineering degrees. Mm-hmm. But he always stayed on the finance side, and I was tech and operations.
How would you describe your leadership style?
So I'm not afraid to roll up my sleeves, get them dirty. I believe in giving my team credit and making, actually enabling them to get the credit. I that's not really very important to me. Mm-hmm. And I like to be out front. You know, I like to be in the action. I'm not a back of the room leader.
What did you get from your mom that shows up in your leadership style today?
You know, my mom is a doer, mm-hmm. and that really stuck with me. She is the person in the family that gets things done.
What's your proudest moment up till now, Vlad?
My proudest moment up till now, I would say, there's so many of them. The proudest moment would be.
How about it? Tough one. Yeah. So that's good.
Yeah,
enough.
I know.
What's the website address?
The website address is www.edgewebhosting.net.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Vlad Friedman, who's the CEO of Edge Web Hosting. I'd like to thank Colin Callahan for helping with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Colin Callahan with your Business Spotlight, and today we have
Jim Williams.
And what's your company, Jim?
Schambach and Williams Consulting.
And what does Schambach and Williams Consulting do?
Well, it's really a two-person firm that's set up to help advise clients on government IT and government contracts.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization special?
Well, since there's just the two of us, it's really Pat Schambach, my partner, and myself. We have 63 years of federal experience across many different agencies, as well as combined we have 15 years of experience in the private sector. So we feel like we're really in the best position looking at his experience as an IT leader, mine as a program management and acquisition leader, to help advise companies who are in that business on how best to win government contracts.
Mm-hmm. And why do you enjoy this work?
Well, it's really the culmination of what I've done throughout my career. I spent almost 31 years on the federal side working as a customer, leading major programs, and I enjoyed that very much. And then working in the private sector for the past 5 years, supplying to governments around the world. And this really feels like I can take the knowledge that I've gained and the experience and help other people.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think is the that you do better than your competition?
Well, again, I think it's a unique blend that Pat and I bring together, where he's been a CIO in many different agencies, and I've, depending upon how you count, over nearly 31-year career, worked in 10 federal agencies. My wife referred to me as a migrant worker once, and I've just had a lot of experience as a customer in a lot of different parts of government and nearly every agency in government.
Mm-hmm, great. And Jim, what's your website?
Schambach and Williams Consulting.
Great. This is Colin Callahan, and this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Colin Callahan. And today's show is brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping you reduce the cost of health care. For this segment, we have Brian Martin, who's the president of a company called History Associates. Tell us a little bit about History Associates.
History Associates is a historical services firm based in Rockville, Maryland. We help clients discover, preserve, and present their past. Discovery is about research and finding evidence. Preservation is about making artifacts archives, digital artifacts, preserving those and making those available for use, and then presentation is actually doing books or exhibits and that.
You do this for individuals or companies?
Primarily organizations, although we've done some work for individuals.
And why would an organization want to do that?
It's primarily about their identity and communicating their identity, either to their employees or to their constituents or to their market. But they want to tell their story. And, you know, stories are powerful things.
Yeah. Why are stories so important to tell, in your opinion?
I think it's a way that we communicate about who we are. And it's something that is just part of who we are as human beings. You know, history is something that we all have a history.
So we'll get a little bit more on that in a minute. But how long has the company been around?
We've been around since 1981.
1981. Did you found the company?
No, I did not. It was founded by four individuals, all of whom had some academic background, one of whom was a government historian at the mm-hmm. time at the Department of Energy, just retired. And they thought that there was a value in doing history. They actually wrote their first project was for the Department of Energy, writing a history of the accident at Three Mile Island, which had happened about a month before they were hired.
So you've been around probably some interesting stories, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the creation of them,
mm-hmm.
or actually the telling of them.
Mm-hmm.
What does a company discover about itself when it hires somebody like you?
Often it discovers that they've always told stories about their organization, and often they find that there are actually new stories out there that they hadn't discovered before, either because we talk to new people or we do research in places they didn't ever look for that story, and they learn new things about themselves or what was important to them, or in some cases confirming the values that they already hold.
Mm-hmm.
But in a new way, in a fresh way.
And you first became associated with this company in the capacity of what?
I was a research historian, which was an entry-level position. I went out to Oklahoma to write a labor history for a federal agency in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
At what point in your life did this become an interesting piece of work that you would give a career to it?
I think from the very beginning, the idea that I had the name historian on my business card, wow. That was pretty exciting, and somebody was paying me to do this. This was fun.
How young were you when you first realized that you loved history?
I was probably about the fourth grade. It was at one of those book sales. You know, picked up a book about the Battle of Gettysburg and thought that was pretty neat.
I mean, your eyes just light up when you talk about the word history. All of a sudden, you're on it. And so, what is it about history? I liked history, but I didn't make a career out of it.
I just like discovering the stories and piecing things together, being a detective. And I think people find, you know, and telling those stories to people, they find it fascinating.
What's your favorite historical story?
Gosh.
That's one really of your favorites.
One of my favorites. Actually, we just recently did a piece for Gettysburg College, where I went to school. We did a look at their role in the Battle of Gettysburg, and watching that come together, and seeing how students, professors, and others had been involved and engaged as both as combatants and as people in the town was really fascinating.
Uh-huh. When did you take over running the company?
In 2007.
Why did you want that job?
Why
leave the very business of history and actually run a company doing it?
I'm not sure I really understood that I would have to leave, and I haven't entirely left.
Was that a tough transition from you, touching, leaving the very thing that you love so much and running the company that does it?
I mean, I'd already had to deal with that as a manager in the company
uh-huh.
and understanding the difference between doing the work and leading the work. So, and it's always been challenging, but I found that there were some real challenges and enjoyment in running the company. I love to compete. I love to win. I love to prepare to win. So working on the business development side has always been fun.
So how does being a research historian prepare someone to be a terrific CEO?
Couple things. Communication. I learned early on that communication and being able to effectively communicate, particularly in writing, was really important. I think the idea and the desire to learn and get to the bottom of things and investigate things was something that I learned as a historian that I use frequently in my work. Great. As a president.
Where are you from, Brian?
From Connecticut.
What was life growing up in Connecticut like?
Pretty nice. My father was an insurance executive with the Hartford Insurance, and my mom was primarily a stay-at-home mom when I was a kid.
So when your dad heard you wanted to be a historian instead of a high-powered insurance executive, what did he think?
He didn't say much, but that was sort of him. But he handled it. He gave me the freedom to pursue it, and I think he was really excited that I was able to chase that and pursue it.
Looking back on it, what did you most learn from your dad?
The value of hard work and the importance of relationships. Mm-hmm. My dad was a great friend, and I learned how to be a good friend from him.
And your mom?
My mom, the eyes lighting up, that's my mom. She was the one taking initiative.
She knew how to delight in things.
Yeah, and to plan things and to pursue things. She was
great. How about some significant mentors along the way?
I had a high school teacher in history who really
What a surprise, a history teacher.
Yeah, fostered that. I had a college professor who asked me, you know, what am I doing? And I was actually looking at insurance jobs at the time. And he said, no, you need to go to grad school. And then the chairman of the company, one of our founders, Richard Hewlett, helped me pursue my graduate degree. I actually wrote my dissertation in his basement on a sabbatical from the company. Mm. So
you had two brothers, you told us, in the green mm-hmm. room. What were you like as a kid? What would your brothers, how did they describe you?
A wave beating the shore. I was the one that was the grinder. I was the, you know, I was the striver, the pusher.
Did they have an interest in history as well? Is that
not so much. Uh-huh. Not so much. But we have a great relationship, and they've been great supporters. Mm-hmm. So
the grinding is something that shows up still today?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think it, and I think it goes back to things like competition. I mean, when you have two brothers, it's about competition.
Yeah.
And you learn to enjoy that and love that. And I was not, my older brother was the natural athlete. Uh-huh. So it was always pushing to keep up with him.
What was the biggest surprise when you woke up as the CEO and going forward? What was your biggest surprise about actually being in the role? Mm.
I don't think there was a whole lot of surprise. Having been in the business and been mm-hmm. part of it for a long time, there wasn't a lot that was terribly surprising uh-huh. to me.
So they prepared you well along
yes.
the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who was your famous or most favorite historical figure?
Abraham Lincoln.
In what way, and what did you learn from learning about Abraham Lincoln that informs how you lead today?
I think one aspect of it is to be an effective communicator, and you know I can't begin to approach his ability as effective communicator.
What does effective communicator mean? I know you know it when you see it, but how would you describe it?
I think one is you're able to get your message across, but also that you use words well, in ways that draw people in, and certainly Lincoln did that. I think the other thing is that Lincoln was a very humble person. And I think that's a key part of leadership, is recognize that you aren't the one making all this happen.
What would you say the toughest thing you've ever accomplished is?
I think being an expert witness in a legal case where my professional work went under very tight scrutiny and stood up to that. Mm. That was probably the hardest thing.
How about your proudest moment up till now?
Proudest moment was back in 2011. The company celebrated its 30th anniversary, and I got to host a get-together at the National Archives down amongst the Charters of Freedom with the Archivist of the United States and clients and current employees, former employees. And that was just a really fun evening.
Sounds like a great day. What's the website address, Brian?
www.historyassociates.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Brian Martin, who's the president of History Associates. I'd like to thank Colin Callahan for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And if you want to hear more about this show, you can hear us again at businesstalkradio.net. This is Peter Schwartz. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offutt Kerman. What is Offutt Kerman, Doug?
Offutt Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into too particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying, and we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying. And since then, he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offuttkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, Colin Callahan, and today's show is brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping you reduce the cost of health care. With us for this segment is a gentleman by the name of Todd Stottlemyre with a company called Accenture. What is Accenture?
Accenture is an information technology company that provides software development, legacy O&M, mobile applications, and analytics to health, financial services, and other public sector and commercial customers.
And when was this company founded?
The company was founded in 2002.
And how big or small is it today?
We have about 1,100 employees and revenues about $200 million annually.
And I understand that you were brought in around 2011 to run it?
Yes.
Why'd you want this job?
Well, I was excited about the challenge. I knew that the company had some challenges, the opportunity to come in and build a vision, build a very strong team, and get very focused in terms of what we're very good at in the marketplace.
And why would you say, without being modest, that you were the ideal pick to run the company at the time?
Well, I'd been through these situations before, had built companies, had done a turnaround before, and this was an opportunity to come in and take a good company and make it a lot better company.
What surprised you most when you took it over?
You're always a little bit surprised when you get inside a company, some things you thought you knew you didn't know, and probably were not as strong as I thought we would be in terms of our solutions offerings for our customers. We weren't as good as we needed to be.
So if you've done a turnaround and this isn't the first time you've run a company and been brought into one, what's it like to be the leader of a company and have people be a little skeptical of you in the beginning?
Well, the first thing you do is come and listen, and that's certainly what we did here. We came in and we met with the senior managers. We sat down and we listened to them. We wanted to listen and took some time to really assess the strengths of the company, some of the challenges that the company faced before putting in place a plan to start to build the company going
forward. And when you're listening, what do you think the employee most wants you to hear?
Well, the employee wants to tell you about the company, but they also want to tell you about themselves. And yeah. We like to say, before you talk about we, you have to talk about me.
When did you learn that?
When I was probably early in my career, I mean, I think it's human nature. People are interested in we, what the company can do, but they also want to tell you about me, and they want to know what this means to them in terms of the future direction of the company.
So take us back to the first time you started running companies.
Well, the first opportunity to run a company, I was president of a consulting organization, but the first time I was CEO, I was CEO of a technology company in 2002, a company by the name of Apigen Technologies.
Mm-hmm. Have you always been associated with the technology side of it?
Not always. I worked in healthcare. I worked as an executive for the Inova Healthcare System, and I also worked as president and CEO of the nation's largest business association, the National Federation of Independent Business.
Mm. What is it about business that is so fascinating to you?
Well, business is, you know, the free market in business is really the energy, if you will, of this country. And
so say that again.
Business business in the free market system is really the energy, the juice of this country. I mean, it is the opportunity to take an idea and turn it into something very significant, to create jobs, to employ people, give other people opportunities to realize their dreams and aspirations.
Did you discover that when you got into business, or did you... Were you around it as a younger kid?
Probably more when I got into business. My father had served in the Foreign Service, so the business opportunities were really after I graduated from college.
Why not go the direction your father went? Why go into business?
Well, you know, my career is really, I've had the opportunity to serve in business, but also do a lot of public service work outside of business. So in addition to being a CEO of a business, I remain very interested in public service and particularly nonprofit works. I've been able to do both, which
give
is really
an example.
Best of both worlds. Well, I started a nonprofit called Helping Children Worldwide with some other folks that provides health care and other support for children, women, and families, both in this country and in West Africa and Sierra Leone. Also very involved in higher education. I went to William & Mary, and I serve as chair of the board of William & Mary today.
Mm-hmm.
So how young were you when you realized that you liked to fix and build things?
Well, I always loved to build. When I was very young, I loved to build things with my hands. So
like,
I always had
like
this
what?
Building, anything with wood.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I would build anything with wood. So I always liked to build things when I was very, very young. When I got into business, I think my first company, it was a great company. I learned a lot. And watching those leaders, you know, build this organization, put together a vision, a strategy, and then go execute that was really exciting to me.
Was your dad a woodworker too?
He was. Uh-huh. My dad is as good as that. He is one of the most handy people you're ever going to find. He can build anything. He can fix anything.
Uh-huh. And so as a kid, did you worked with him?
I was his aide de camp. Uh-huh. I was every weekend I was working with my dad, tagging alongside with tools as we were working on something around the house.
Yeah. What do you think you learned with that time with your dad and just seeing how working with wood and working with your hands, how do you think that shows up in your leadership style today?
Well, patience, because mm-hmm. sometimes when you're fixing things, it takes a while and it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go. I remember one time we were knocking on a wall, plaster wall. We thought we were going to fix a very small hole, but the whole wall came down. And so you learn a lot of patience, and you also learn the unexpected can happen too. So, and I just enjoy the camaraderie. You had a lot of opportunity to really spend great quality time with my dad.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Well, I grew up in New York. Born in Pittsburgh, grew up in New York until high school. Moved down here to West Springfield.
What do you remember most about your childhood?
Well, my dad was in the U.S. Foreign Service, so it was a very international environment. So I grew up with people from around the world, and I think appreciated different cultures and languages probably at a much earlier age than people that haven't had that type of opportunity.
Yeah. Go a little further with that. What were you watching as a young man?
Well, I watched my dad. My dad was at the United Nations and also at the U.S. Mission in New York working for the United States Ambassador. In the 1970s, it was a very interesting time in
right.
the world, if you will. The Third World was really changing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of countries that had been colonies were no longer colonies, and so the world was, you know, becoming very different in addition to the Soviet Union-U.S. Conflict. And to watch my dad interact with people from around the world, I really was amazed at how he did that with such aplomb and such diplomacy, if you will, and also at the same time really representing the interests of the United States.
How do you suppose that experience shaped who you are today?
Well, I think I've done a lot of international work, so I think I have a very good appreciation for culture, a very good appreciation for language, and I've had to negotiate deals in Europe and China and elsewhere, and I think that experience really helped me to be able to do much better at that.
Well, how does that experience help you? Because it broadens your point of view or what?
Well, it broadens your point of view, broadens your perspective. I think it gives you great appreciation that people are different, and
mm-hmm.
those differences, you can value those differences, but also respecting cultures. That Americans are very different than others, and they're different than us. And so when you go into a negotiation, you want to appreciate and respect those cultures in order to get a successful deal done.
You were telling us earlier your father was also very active in the civil rights movement at the time.
Yeah, I had a really big impact on me to watch. You know, it wasn't necessarily a popular thing to do. My dad just believed that he was a very poor kid who grew up in southern Pennsylvania, had the opportunity to go to college because of the GI Bill going in the Army, and he was just, in his heart committed to civil rights, equal opportunity. And the opportunity to watch him and spend some time with him and do some things with him when I was very young, I mean, that really had an impact on me.
Right. How would you characterize your style of leadership?
Well, I try to think of myself as a servant leader. I try to listen. I think that's very important, and be an effective communicator. I try to take people's points of view into consideration when making decisions. And I also expect as a leader, once we make a decision, that we're going to go forward and we're going to execute on that decision as a team. But the servant leadership part's important to me, because one of the things being a CEO that I learned is that when you make decisions, you impact people's lives.
Did you always lead that way, or come into that kind of leadership?
I think I learned it from a couple of really good mentors, Earl Williams, who was CEO of BDM, and Phil Odeen, the CEO of BDM. They were true servant leaders, and to watch their leadership style, I think I've tried to emulate that leadership style when I've had the opportunity to lead.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
Two sisters, one who's deceased. Mm.
And were they older or younger?
Both were younger.
Uh-huh. So yeah. You were the oldest boy.
I was the oldest boy.
So where do you want to go next? Your next?
Well, right now, I mean, I try to get up every day and make a difference. I really do make a difference with my company as a CEO there, and in some of the other activities, certainly with my family, my kids, my wife, and my community. It's really important to me to not only hopefully be a very good leader of a company, but also be a strong leader in our community and build a better community for people who are coming behind me.
You've been involved in Fairfax County and all things Fairfax County for a long time. What is it about this county that is so great?
Well, it's a great county. It's a very diverse county. I think that's one of the neat things about our county is the diversity. People from all over the country, all over the world, different ethnicities, gender, race. I think that's a real strength for this county. It's a business county, which I really enjoy. A lot of very, very smart people in this county you get a chance to work with.
Great.
So when you're interviewing someone, what are some of the traits you're looking in for somebody to know that you've got a good person?
Well, I'm looking for leadership. I'm looking for resilience. I'm really interested in when they've had some tough times in their life, both personally and professionally, and how they've responded. Looking for perseverance, because I think perseverance, Yogi Berra said, I think 80% is showing up. And I think there's truth to that, showing up, working hard, being committed. So I'm very interested in them personally, too. I mean, just kind of tell me your life experience. Tell me your story. How did you get to where you are? Because I think when you learn that life story, you learn a lot about the person.
Yeah, we hear that a lot on the show about grit and resilience. What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
Well, I think, a couple. I was an athlete, had a couple serious injuries, had to come back from those at a young age. Was certainly, starts that resilience path. I was a CFO of a company, thought I was going to become CEO. It didn't work out. I ended up leaving the company. I was, really disappointed, but, kind of got back on the horse and said, I'm going to go try it again. And somebody said to me in life, you have three options, either give in, give up, or give it all you got. And I try to give it all I got.
Great. What's the website address, Todd?
www.acentia, acentia.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Todd Stottlemyre, who's the CEO of Accenture. I'd like to thank Colin Callahan for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And if you'd like to hear this show again, visit businesstalkradio.net. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
Our clients say that it's the three P's, our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified, and they're fun to work with. Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is, perhaps, the perfect client for you?
businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, joined by my co-host, Colin Callahan. And for this segment, we have Melvin Petty, who's the managing partner and CEO of a company called ERP International. What is ERP International, Melvin?
ERP was founded in 2006. We're a health science and technology company. We currently operate in 28 states. We have 330 employees. And we're organized around three practices, which is advisory, information technology, and clinical and biotech.
When did you found this company?
October 2006. My wife and I founded it together.
You're sitting around the dinner table and say, let's start a company?
Absolutely.
Take us back to those days. What was going on that you said, you know what, let's take the shot?
Well, my wife had been home for 16 years with our kids, and she was looking to go back into the workforce. And I was in transition. I had managed an asset for 10 years, and so I was looking for something else to do. And so we said, well, we should probably make a go of it ourselves. And entrepreneurship was always something we had talked about. So the opportunity was there, and so we set on our way.
So you guys must have had a lot of faith in each other or faith in the idea. Which one was it?
A lot of faith in each other. I mean, you know, my wife is probably the biggest advocate, the biggest fan. And a great deal of confidence, and certainly my business skills.
And you're still speaking to each other after all these years?
Yes.
So
yes.
How does that's not always easy. What's the secret to partnership?
Well, I think that the secret is good communication, honesty, trust, and certainly integrity. You know, we are soulmates, so we talk at night, we talk in the morning. So we've got a very, very strong communication channel.
How'd you go about getting your first customer?
You know, my first customer was not someone I knew, and I started out, when I first started the business, given my background being finance, accounting, and consulting, I launched a consulting practice first, advising other CEOs as into strategies for their business. And
So if this person didn't know you, how did they go about believing in you?
Well, you know, there was a common or mutual business partner who introduced us, and we had a couple of sessions around the table. And after a couple of hours or a cup of coffee, I think the prospective customer saw something in me that was worth investing in. And now we are strategic partners in a number of ventures.
What do you think that was that he saw or they saw?
I think it was energy. I think it was... you know, my network of resources. You know, I am an expert in the health science and technology arena, so we know a lot of the same people, and I think that gave him the confidence that he needed to engage me.
And how young were you when you first realized the value of networking?
Oh, I think in high school. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think my...
Tell us what was going on then.
Well, you know, I was always a popular kid, I think I inherited that from my mother. I mean, she just enjoys people, and she's a great networker. So I was always very comfortable with people. So, you know, I figured that if I had great associations in life, it may eventually turn out to be something.
Popular isn't usually enough to be a good networker. What else is going on in order for you to connect with people?
Well, I think, you know, popular is important, but... you know, we have this thing where you have to be present when you engage folks. You have to really invest in folks and make sure you demonstrate the necessary compassion for their interests.
Did you learn that from your mom?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
So you have a great way of describing your company. It's a 300-person lifestyle business. How can that possibly be?
It's fun. We enjoy what we do. And
define lifestyle for us.
lifestyle is quality of life where family is first. And that's something I got from my dad. Mm-hmm. You know, he always put family first. He was a hard worker. And, you know, our company is comprised of 62% of moms. So you have to create an environment for them to support their families as well as take care of their communities. And we have an extraordinarily flexible work arrangement. And I think they appreciate it, and I think it provides great benefits to the firm.
Is that demographic by design or by happenstance?
Just by happenstance. Uh-huh. I don't think it, you know, I don't think it was ever intended, but that's the way it turned out, and we're pretty happy with it.
Yeah.
So it's been your experience, if you create that kind of environment, you actually get the best out of people in their work?
Absolutely. You know, I think if people trust that you're going to do the right thing, that you have the confidence in their abilities, you empower them to do and exercise their trade. You know, it's an environment for success.
So where are you from, Melvin?
I'm from a little town in Virginia, southern Virginia, Danville. It's a textile town. And I grew up on a farm. I attended James Madison University.
Your dad was a farmer?
Yes.
So what was it growing up like? What was it like growing up on a farm for you?
It was a lot of hard work.
Were you tending to the business of farming?
Well, you know, it was not by choice. But if you lived in my dad's household, you had an assignment every day.
Did you have brothers and sisters helping out too?
Yes, I was the youngest of eight. But by the time I started to engage with the farm, most of my siblings had moved on. Some of my siblings are as much as 14 years older than me. So.
What do you, looking back on it, what did that experience teach you as a young man,
I think,
working on the farm?
I think hard work, you know, hard work, integrity. You know, farmers are self-contained. You know, they live on what they produce. Their livelihood is based on what they produce, and running a business is not a lot different from farming. I mean, you're investing in your business. You're investing in your team of folks. So, you know, you're firmly committed to the success of your business and outcomes of your business.
What do you remember most about your dad?
His hard work. His hard work, his accountability, and his integrity.
And your mom?
She's a social butterfly. I mean, she loves people. She embraces everyone. And she's always trying to help the next person.
Tell us about the first time you took a risk.
For me, it was in 1995. I had worked for a Wall Street firm for a number of years. And an opportunity came about with a very close friend, and he had started a venture in the basement of his house. And so I joined him when he was had a staff of 10. Over the next 10 years, we grew it to about 400 people.
That must have been a heck of an experience. What did you learn most from that?
Well, I think a number of things. First and foremost is do your due diligence. I think I was there 2 months, and I joined him as a CFO, and by the time we got the books reconciled, we had lost $250,000.
And you were the CFO?
I was the CFO, so do your due diligence.
So how were you sleeping in those days?
Well, you know, we had to make it work, so it was
pretty peaceful. How did you make it work?
Well, I think we trusted each other, we believed in each other, and we came up with a strategy to reinvest in the firm. I mean, we had lots of cash, although we had lost money. We had cash, so we kind of saw a way forward.
Why not go your father's way and be a farmer?
Well, I think that you know, that was a very difficult life. I mean, it was physical, demanding. You know, I think my dad never made more than $16,000 in any year from the farm. So it's a tough way to provide for your family.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see it as a career path for me personally.
So what was the path from Danville to GMU to Wall Street?
I think my wife. I graduated JMU, and my wife and I, we'd been dating for 3 or 4 years, and she was going to move to the Baltimore area, so I was following her. So I ended up in the National Capital Region, mm-hmm. and landed a number of assignments here, and had the opportunity to have a working MBA, where I've you know, my work career is comprised of all of the C-level jobs: CFO, COO, CEO. So, you know, that's a great accumulation of skills to go off and launch a business.
Yeah. Did you have significant mentors on that path as you got to Baltimore and landed there?
I did. You know, all of my siblings took an interest in me.
Uh-huh.
You know, I had the pleasure of sitting with my dad, day in and day out and have lessons learned from all of their mistakes. So,
what's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
I think for me personally, it was probably more of a personal thing where we have two daughters. My youngest daughter is a sophomore at Miami University in Oxford. My oldest daughter works in a firm. But we had a son, and we lost him. Mm-hmm. He only lived an hour. So that was extraordinarily difficult for my wife and myself.
How does that change a person?
Well, I think for me, and it allows you to be in the present. You don't take anything for granted. And most people see me, they say, well, why are you smiling so much? And, you count your blessings every day. You enjoy your experiences, and you're in the presence because you never know what's going to happen.
Right. How about your proudest moment up till now, Melvin?
I think my relationship with my wife. Sandra is she's been my rock through this, and I've just admire her. She's a wonderful person. So I think that's probably my greatest overachievement to date.
How'd you get the name for your company?
ERP International. Well, being a former accountant, I've implemented a number of ERPs, and our mission is enhancing performance and predictability, but it matched very nicely with the names of our daughters, Erica and Rachel Petty.
How nice. What's the website address?
www.erpinternational.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Melvin Petty, who's the managing partner and CEO of ERP International. We've had a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Vlad Friedman, who's the CEO of Edge Web Hosting, Brian Martin, the president of History Associates, Todd Stottlemyre, the CEO of Essentia, and finally Melvin Petty, the managing partner and CEO of ERP International. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you we wouldn't have a radio show. And if you want to hear the show again, you can always hear it on businesstalkradio.net. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
The American Veterans Center invites you to attend the 2014 National Memorial Day Parade, Monday, May 26th at 2 p.m. along Constitution Avenue. Join thousands as we honor the sacrifices of our military from the American Revolution to today, featuring music performances, marching bands, celebrities, and active duty personnel, all made possible with support from Strayer University, Wells Fargo, and visitmyrtlebeach.com. To learn more about how you can see the parade, visit nationalmemorialdayparade.com.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and, of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a lavish terrier-hound chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle, simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
For too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone. They're a miracle, made possible by volunteers like you who walk in March for Babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible for thousands of families. Who will you march for?
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and Federal News Radio.